side B of cassette number one. Continue.
He's right on the big willows, bend them down, and he drives them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And play around. Sometimes Aunt Jane's Laura was with us and took her mother's cow. And in the winter, I guess they had to get a little hay, you know. But as soon as there was any grass, as long as it lasted, we herded the cow.
Mm-hmm. One cow or more?
One.
One cow.
Our cow and Aunt Jane's cow.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fun along the creek banks, you know, in the willows, playing house and playing on the willows that way. I know the cows got lost one time. We were sure afraid to go home. We was worried. We went up and down that street hunting all through the willows and hunting and couldn't find those cows. And finally I saw a broken barbed wire in the fence along side of the south side of 12th Street. I thought, now those cows could got through that wire. I figured it out. They weren't on the street, they were somewhere around. And there was a big barn way back in with hay. So I said, come on, let's go back there, and that must be where they are. They're not on the street anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we went back there, and sure enough, there they were, just going down on that farm with hay. And we drove them back, and they went right to that spot where they got through the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura and I, that was my half-sister, kept our mothers in kindling wood. You know, all those branches would be dry, dust, and old.
Mm-hmm.
And we would break them off. And we'd tie an old stocking or something around them and have one under each arm and go down the street pulling them home.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd get an axe and see who could chop the biggest pile of wood in a certain length of time. Well, that's how we spent our time, and we chopped up those dried willows.
Mm-hmm.
And that furnished the fuel for cooking, you know, in the summertime. We did a lot of things like that to help out. But we had playhouses too, and had a good time. Clothes we used to wear quite. Maybe you've heard us speak of Hans and Annie Madison that lived over there. They always sat by the OSL tracks north of 12th Street.
I don't think so.
Well, Oscar Madison lived there. His parents passed away.
Mm-hmm. I remember that name.
Well, that was Hans and Annie Madison. And Annie Madison was a counselor in the Relief Society, and they married Ord and my mother. And they were real close and friendly. She used to come over to our place, but she was a different type from Mother. She didn't work very much. She always had aches or pains or something. And I know when she'd come, she'd sit this way rubbing her legs and talking about her rheumatism, and she couldn't work, and Hans had to do all the work. And so she had quite an easy life. But I was going to tell you something about those people now.
Clothes.
Oh, she had a daughter, Dorothy, just the one daughter, and she was always very well dressed, had lovely clothes. Well, when she wouldn't wear them any longer, Annie would bring them over to Mother for us girls to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we didn't like it very well. Our girls thought Dorothy was too proud and haughty, and they didn't want to wear Dorothy's clothes, and Mother didn't have much knack of fixing them up. She didn't sew very much, so we usually wore them just like Dorothy did. If they didn't fit, well, they didn't fit, that was all. But she was very good to bring clothing over to help Mother out that way. In those days, they did things like that, you know. If anyone didn't have and they did, they would share, divide up. And Mother being a widow, it was quite a family, you know. It was their duty, they felt, to help her out all they could.
Well, how about, tell me something about my grandmother, Tracy, your mother, that we might not have written down somewhere. Did she ever tell you anything about her life?
Well, she was born in England, of course. And
her name was Emma?
Emma Burdett. And her father's name was Thomas Burdett. And her mother's name was Elizabeth Burdett. And they were converts from England. My father was on a mission there, and he converted a good many of the Burdett family brought them into the church. But it seems to me that Thomas had already joined the church before Father got over there. And they emigrated to Utah, you know.
Where did your mother join the church then? In England?
My mother was born in the church.
Oh. Sure. Oh, sure. I'm all confused.
Yes, mother was born in the church. Her father, Thomas Burdett, and Elizabeth came to Utah. And I have a little of his diary here, but not very much. That right after they arrived, just a few months, his wife died. I left him with the three little girls, Emma and Jane and Eliza, and a little boy, Tommy. Little Tommy died right soon after his mother. He's buried up here in the cemetery. And Eliza married John Horsepool. She has quite a number of descendants. Some of her descendants are very active over in the Third Ward of the church. Bishops, Jack Horsepool and Frank Horsepool. Frank's the one that, I think he was the bishop's counselor in the Third Ward. They're all good people. And, of course, the father married mother. And, Ann Bickington from Marriott took the other two girls. Somebody uptown took Eliza and raised her, I forget who it was, after their mother died. So the girls were separated. Eliza was brought up different from the other two. And Ann Bickington and Marriott took Mother and Aunt Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived with her. She had never had any children of her own. But they worked the girls awfully hard on the farm.
Now, where was the farm that Ann Bickington lived on? What part
right
of Marriott?
Right kitty corner from the meeting house. You remember where?
John Morris lived there later on, didn't he?
No, he's right down near the corner. But this is a little house that sits back in. Quite a little ways up from the corner.
Still standing?
Mm-hmm. And
on the south side of the street?
Yes, you would remember that woman that had it then. What was her name? She was a niece of Grandma Bickington. Fanny Reeder. You remember
what
Fanny
was that Reeder? House? Yeah.
You used to go there to get the water for Sackman.
That's right.
Didn't you?
Yes.
Well, that was her brother's daughter. Ann Bickington didn't have any children. So she adopted Mother and Aunt Jane. And her brother was Henry Reeder, and he took over the place after she died, and that's where this Fanny Reeder comes in there. That Mother told about how she had to work the grindstone to grind the axes and things that they used on the farm, treadle it with her foot.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave her a rupture that she carried all of her life.
Is that right?
All her life. Dr. Rich, the first time she ever had an MD, Ezra Rich come gave her an examination once when she was sick when we lived at Coop's store. And he says, how long have you carried this rupture? She says, about all my life, since I was a girl.
Hmm.
He says, well, there isn't anything I can do about it now. It's too long standing.
Hmm.
Some of her insides would come right out of the world, you know.
Hmm.
And she'd have to lie down on her back and push it back up.
Hmm.
Now she carried that all her life and had all that family's children.
Hmm.
But that's who raised her. And then my father, his mother, lived up on the bench, you know, Grandma Tracy, mm-hmm. in the place of Uncle Dave, there on that spot, not that same house. And he came down there with the thrashers. At thrashing time, he worked on the thrashing machine. And they slept down there, you know, sometimes to save getting up and going back the next morning. But this particular night, he did anyway. He was so tired, he didn't feel like walking home, and he went and got something to eat somewhere, and then lay down the granary to sleep to get up at daylight and go to work the next morning. And he was in the granary asleep, and the Grandma Bickington only had two rooms, and Mother didn't like to say her prayers in public. So she used to go outside to say her evening prayers. And she slipped in the granary. And she was talking in a loud whisper, else right out loud, saying her prayers. And when she said amen, a male voice said amen.
You know,
and Father got up then. He was just lying there on the grain, on the wheat drift. He got up and told her that she was the girl he wanted to marry. He wanted a prayerful, humble, sweet girl like she was. And he proposed, and she was young, you know.
Had she known him?
Hmm?
Had she known him much?
Oh, yes, they were in the same ward. No.
Mm-hmm.
She said she was so surprised to hear that male voice say amen when she said amen. She didn't expect there was anyone within earshot of all, you know. That's how he proposed.
Hmm. Did she say yes?
She said she'd have to ask Grandma first.
Hmm. That would have been Grandma Becky.
And you know what happened? Huh? You know this Henry Reeder? He was a young man, not married then. And when my grandma gave her consent, Mother accepted it, and Henry heard about it, he says, Emma, I'd rather you take this knife, he picked up the butcher knife, and cut my heart out and have to have you tell me that. He says, I wanted you for my life.
Hmm.
I says, gosh, I'm glad, Mother, you didn't marry Henry Reeder. I think Henry Tracer is much finer man. I don't believe he ever did marry.
Hmm.
Don't remember that he did.
Hmm. Well, now, when did he marry Aunt Jane?
Well, I'll tell you about Aunt Jane. They'd been living there together, Grandma Bickington, inseparable, all that time, and she just couldn't stand it to be away from Mother, so she was up there every day, sticking around. And Father says, well, if you're going to be here all the time, I might as well marry you, too. That suited everybody just fine. She was sure happy to get away from Bickington. She might have married Henry Reeder, you know.
Hmm.
And she was happy to be up there with Mother. They just got along so well all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Never a word.
Well, now, my grandmother, Emma Burdett Tracy, had her father had joined the church in England before coming to America.
Thomas Burdett. And I think her name was Elizabeth Shenton. She married Thomas Burdett.
You've got that in your genealogical
record. If I'm not confused with some of the grandparents, but that was the name of one of them. But Grandfather Burdett helped the elders. He helped the missionaries that would come there, you know. He was so kind. He was the kindest, sweetest old man you ever expect to meet anywhere.
How old was Emma Burdett when they left England?
Just a little girl. I don't think she was in her teens yet.
Did she ever tell you anything about coming over on the boat?
Yes, it seems to me like she did, about how they'd go so far and then the wind would drive them back.
Hmm.
And what a long time it took to get over here. And how once they put them down below, that the storm, they felt, might take the ship down. They put them below.
Was the ship that they came over on a Mormon immigrant ship? Was it full of Mormons, or did they
yes,
come on?
Yes, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that someone told them not to worry. A boat had never went down yet with Mormon converts and missionaries on. And they put them down below, and they prayed and they sang, and it seems to me that somebody made the remark, a captain or somebody, that you just couldn't down those Mormons. They wouldn't give up no matter what. They just felt that their lives would be spared. They weren't afraid.
How did they get to Utah?
Well, Grandpa Burdett stopped over in New York City for a while. And then he came on, and of course the saints had all left the eastern countries, you know, they were here. And I think they were in a handcart company, though. It seems to me I remember about them pulling and pushing and helping to get across. Of course, there wasn't any trains.
Did your mother walk across with the handcart company?
I shouldn't put that down as a fact. I'm not too sure about it. I've heard all these things, but...
Seems to me that Grandma Tracy used to say that she walked across the plains.
Yes, that seems the way I heard it. That I think they had a wagon. But they would be required to walk because they had their supplies and things. And they were expected to walk a good deal of the way, you know. They didn't ride all the time,
mm-hmm.
even with the wagons. I don't think she was with a hand cart company, though. They had their wagon, I'm sure.
What about, let's see, be my great-grandfather Burdett. How did he earn a living? What was he doing in England, do you know?
Side number one of the large 7-inch, 1,800-foot reel just ran out. So I don't know whether that needs to be turned over. I'll have to just find out. I have turned the tapes over to side two, but there is nothing recorded on side two. It's just a blank all the way through. I am now going to record 7-inch diameter tape number 2, side number 1.
Now, let's see, on the last tape I was asking
what
your grandfather Burdett did in England.
He was a hosiery maker. He made hose for the army, wasn't he?
Yes.
For the government.
Did he continue that after he came to Utah?
He worked in the East when he got to New York. I believe it was in New Jersey that he worked in a textile mill where he made stockings, made hosiery. He didn't work at it after he got here in Utah.
Just a minute, Dad. The man I was just talking was my father, Howard Hall, who just came home from Sunday school. This is the second tape that I'm recording here at my mother and father's house on 638 28th Street. Today is Sunday, June the 14th, 1959. Dad seems to know more about Mom's grandma than she does. What did your grandfather Burdett do then after he settled? Did he settle in the Mountfort area, Bruce Bench area?
I'll tell you how it is about Dad being able to answer the questions. He has a much better memory than I have. I know all these things, but I have forgotten, and where I have forgotten, he can fill in.
Well, he went to, didn't he go to Plain City?
West Weaver.
He went to West Weaver first, settled there, bought land, and he bought trees, fruit trees, and pears and apples, and other fruits, and
he raised an acre almost of black currants, the old-fashioned black currants. Mother used to take us children over there to pick them. And at one time when we went, he had bought us each a little bucket with a bale across the top, a little pail. It held about a quart. He thought that would encourage us to pick the berries. And then every once in a while he'd come and say, "Now let me look in your bucket." He'd look in our bucket, and then he'd laugh and slap his hands down over his knees. "Now stick your tongue out." He'd say, "Now I can see where the currants are going to." He says, "You must fill your bucket up, because you know your mother needs them to feed your children some nice black currant jam this winter."
Did he marry again after his wife died?
No. Or did he? It seems to me he did marry a lady, and she didn't live very long. Just a very short time. But there was no children there.
He had a lot of property in Ogden.
He rented.
Well, he bought property here in Ogden.
He rented it out.
Oh, yes. He rented out. He had land and houses. And it seems as though he was such a good-natured man that people took advantage of him and...
Free-hearted.
Free-hearted, that is. He was a free-hearted man. People took advantage of him and got all his property away from him.
If they couldn't afford to pay for it, he excused it and let them go on living there, and eventually it was theirs, and he didn't ever get paid for it.
So he had some property down in on Broome's Bench when he died. How much property did he have down there, Lawrence?
I don't recollect that he had any property on Broome's Bench. He lived with Aunt Jane, but that was Father's home.
Oh, that was your father's property.
Mm-hmm.
The Wallensack tape has now switched to a slower speed. It's 3 3/4, whereas up to this point the speed was, well, I think, 7 7.5, something like that. So for a while it looks like I'm going to be recording on this slower speed.
Anything about do you know anything about your grandfather Burdett's father and mother?
No. My father was back there on a mission, and he knew the Burdett families, but Thomas's parents had passed away. And he obtained records of his family back as far as he could get them, as well as other families around while he was there on his mission. But he was always welcome at their homes. There was brothers of Thomas that lived there, and he went to their homes and stayed overnight and had his meals there occasionally.
How about your grandmother, that is the wife of Burdett?
Of Thomas Burdett?
Well, the wife of... Yes, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Have any information about her?
No. As I said, she passed away right after they arrived here. And mother was a very small child. So we don't have much of a record of her. Just the data, her name and date and place of birth and death, is about all we have of her.
Well, let's go to the Tracy side of the family then. Now, you lived with your grandmother Tracy a little bit, didn't you?
Lived with her quite a big bit.
Well, why don't you tell us what you can about her life that doesn't appear in the diary that she wrote. Do you recall any incidents that don't appear there?
She lived across the street from my mother, and my older sisters and half-sisters had taken turns staying with her.
This was in Marriott?
On Broome's Bench. We were in the Marriott ward, but it was a mile up from the meeting house on 12th Street. It was called Broome's Bench. And grandmother lived alone across the street from us. And my older
sister. This is Nancy, Naomi, Nancy. Alexander Tracy that
That's
we're talking
right.
about.
Mm-hmm. And my older sister Myra, half-sister Elizabeth, liked to go out nights. They'd reached that age and they didn't like going over and staying with grandmother every night. So I was younger and I started staying with her. And I would go over right after I ate evening meal. And she was old and real thin and delicate looking. Her legs were so thin that she wrapped rags around them, or claws all around to help hold them together, I guess.
keep warm?
Probably. And to stop any pain she might have in them. And she delighted in recalling the past, and I made a good listener.
How old were you then?
Well, it was before we moved to Idaho. I think I must have been in just around 13. And she would tell me all the story of her life from her home back in Ellisburg, Western New York.
Okay, Mom, you're going to tell us about what your grandmother Tracy told you.
Well, she told me about the coming of the Mormon elders to Ellisburg. It was not so long after the church was organized, and the saints were at that time were at Kirtland, and about joining the church, about her going, hearing that one of the apostles of the church was going to speak on a certain street corner there in Ellisburg by the name of David W. Patton, and how she got a cousin of hers and says, let's go and hear him speak. And she expected to see someone almost, well, not in human form, because of the wild stories that had been told around about the Mormons. But to her amazement, she saw a tall, dark, handsome man get up on the square there in the town and began to speak. She said he hadn't talked very long before I knew he was a prophet of the Lord. The Spirit told me that he was a true messenger bringing the gospel to the people in that locality. And I could have went right down into the waters of baptism right then, for I knew that what he was speaking was the truth. And she later joined the church, and the elders were always welcome at her home. And finally she married Grandpa Tracy. She was very young, 16 or 18, I forget. And they got a wagon and a fine span of horses and went to Kirtland. And I have listened to her tell about their life in Kirtland and how wonderful it was to be able to go over to the temple over in Kirtland and listen to the prophet's voice. And she had a child, and she sometimes had to sit down at the end of the building, but how she thrilled at every word that he spoke. And she told me all these stories and about going from Kirtland to Far West, about the persecutions there. They had a lovely home there, and they had to give that up, were driven out and went to Illinois. And about her life in Illinois, how their home was built up on the brow of the hill just across from where the temple was being built, and how she used to watch the workmen over there on the temple building it. And what a joyful experience it was for her to listen to the music of the trowel and that which they used in building the temple, and then about its completion. And she, and then about the troubles that arose and the saints would have to leave Nauvoo the Beautiful. The prophet had been slain, and his brother Hiram, and now it was to your tents again, O Israel, as she put it. And they had finished the temple, and were able to go through the temple at Nauvoo and receive their endowments there, she and Grandfather Tracy. And then they got their wagon and their supplies and crossed the river and joined the other saints that had already gone before across the river at what was called the
Winter
Quarters, and about the sufferings there and about crossing the plain and all the hardships. And when they reached Council Bluffs, my father was born. Helen Henry Tracy was born at Council Bluffs. And then continuing the journey on to Utah. Most of the families, or a good many of them, settled in Salt Lake City. Some went south and some went north. And they traveled till they came to the Weber River. And they looked around and decided this is the place where they would like to stay. So they settled here in what was then a wild country. There was Indians all about them. They went north to what was called Mound Fort, and they lived at Mound Fort for some time, and then went west a mile, and and established their home on West 12th Street. The Indians would come over there, and they were always kind to them. They played and wrestled with her boys.
How much land did they take in there?
I don't know how much land.
It was several acres.
Probably more than that.
Maybe 10 or 12 acres.
Was it in the